Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Hidden Amish Secrets by Debbie Giusti. Her temporary Amish homecoming could get her killed. Julianne Graber left her Amish life behind after a family tragedy, but now she's back to sell the family home, and someone's dead set on getting rid of her. With her neighbor William Lavey by her side, Julianne must uncover dangerous secrets to make sense of the past and present. Can she find justice for her family and a future with Will before the killer hits his target?
Hi, and welcome to this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hemmerker, and today I'm talking with USA Today and Publishers Weekly bestselling author, Debbie Giusti. She's a medical technologist who loves working with test tubes almost as much as she loves to write. And growing up as an Army brat, she's lived a lot of places, and I think her writing kind of reflects that. So welcome to my show, Debbie.
Oh, thank you, Sarah, for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So now, you have, a lot of books. How do you find the time to write all those books? How did you get started in your writing career? I think I'll go with that one.
Well, I always loved to write. My mother said a woman needs a profession, so she encouraged me into the medical field, which was another love of mine. And then I became a stay-at-home mom after I had children, and my husband and I moved around with the kids, you know, all over the country, and we lived in Germany. And when I came back from Germany and after a few more assignments, and the kids were older, so I was always volunteering in schools, as most moms do, you know, very active in my church, and I felt that maybe I should try to write again, and so I started writing. And then I combined the medical with the writing and did some freelancing for medical journals, and then eventually realized that I really wanted to write full-length fiction. So we moved to Georgia, and I got involved with some writing groups here, and eventually, after a long time, you know, it takes a while to be able to put a book together. So then in 2007, my first book came out. And I've been writing, publishing two books a year since then. So I have about 30 under my belt now, and just got another 3-book contract. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, well, congratulations. That's great. So, and you write, is it all romantic suspense then?
Yes, that's all I write. Yes, that's what I love to read. You know, grew up on Nancy Drew, as many suspense writers did. And always loved that genre, so that's what I stick to. And I don't know if I could write a book if I couldn't kill somebody, you know?
Yeah. I love that, Debbie. That's great. I'm the same way. I love that, the added mystery with the romance, in the romantic suspense. But it can be kind of tricky to write. What do you think is, for you, what is the hardest part about writing romantic suspense?
Well, it seems like there's a lot of elements to a suspense story that need to be woven together. I'm a plotter, so beforehand I want to get a fairly good idea of how the story is going to progress. So we've got, you know, we have to have our red herrings, and there's a lot of foreshadowing that has to go in. And, of course, the villain has to be a somewhat complex person. He has to have goals and motivation and conflict, and he has to kind of change through the story as well. So there's a lot of parts that I feel in a suspense that maybe in a sweet romance, I might not have to pull so many parts together. And also, I think it's sometimes difficult to find new ways for my villain to attack the hero and heroine. You know, you start going through some of the basic things that can happen to them, running off the road and I've done waterfalls, you know, and I always get nature in there. So there'll be a hurricane or a tornado or something as well to up the suspense, or a snowstorm or something. But I think to always keep those stories fresh, it's sometimes difficult to find new ways to cause harm to the hero and heroine. And of course, in a story, we start out with an inciting incident. So kind of a high-packed suspense beginning, and then you just, that danger has to keep escalating, so you have to have a number of incidences throughout the story, as you know, where that villain is attacking the hero or heroine, and so that can be a bit tricky. And now I'm writing Amish, so they don't have electricity, they don't have cars, they don't have cell phones, which compounds the problems as well. But I love it, and as I said earlier, then if things kind of, you know, die down in the story, so to speak, no pun intended, then I can kill another person, and then we get more excitement in the story and more suspense, and everything ratchets up again. So I love the genre. I wouldn't want to write anything else. I'm very happy with suspense, and I love to read it as well.
I know. That's it's one of, obviously, it's one of my favorite genres to read and to write as well. So how do you get, that you talked about, you know, having to keep the story fresh, even if you have maybe some of the same elements that you had in other stories, because, I mean, there's only, you know, like, what, seven plots, plot lines,
right,
in the whole, in the whole universe. So how do you find that, and how do you make your plots fresh, that inspiration for, you know, infusing newness into, you know, boy meets girl, girl and boys in danger, they fall in love. I mean, that's the basic romantic suspense plot. How do you keep yours fresh?
Well, I think the characters do that, don't you? How are they, how I can develop them, how they come across on the page. Sometimes my characters take a little bit of time getting to know. I spend a lot of time before I begin to write trying to get, as I said, the plot down, but also that character fixation for my my hero and heroine. What's the wound that they come with? So many of us carry baggage from our past, a lot, especially when you talk about a Christian story. A lot of people who haven't accepted Christ perhaps fully, or perhaps they think that because of some mistake they made in the past that they aren't worthy of God's love, and so they turn their back on God when in they think that God's turned his back on them, but in reality they've turned their back on him. So trying to come up with all of that backstory for my characters, not that I dump it in the beginning or anything, but it's just kind of woven into who that character is, and that's part of their transformation, how they're able to see themselves in a new light, how they're able to realize that God does love them, accept forgiveness. You know, sometimes forgiving ourselves is the hardest part of having made a mistake. So a lot of times my stories are on that forgiveness and the mercy of God, and how they're able, my characters are able to come to a new place and a new realization about the mistakes that they made in the past and see it in a new light, and then, you know, forgive themselves and then accept God's love. And when they can accept God's love, then they're able to also accept that special love from the hero or heroine, and then we have the happily ever after, which is the fun part of the story, right?
Yes, oh, definitely. And I I liked how you were talking about, you know, being able to use our stories to show that character arc of working through things that we think are unforgivable, and recognize, coming to that point that they recognize that God has forgiven them and that they do need to forgive themselves. I often talk with parents, which, you know, I have four children and we're foster parents as well, and just the power of literature in books to kind of portray themes like forgiveness and empathy and things like that. And there's been studies done that show that, you know, reading a story about a character who forgives can be very powerful in helping us recognize that. So I like to think that, you know, our stories are helping that for, you know, teens and adults as well who need it as much as children do.
That's so true. And I find that with my reader mail, emails, and stale mail, that often they'll say how the story helped them to work through a situation in their own lives. Not that it's the same situation, but they're able to see, because the character could change and grow and get over that devastating mistake that they made or whatever it is that's holding them back. And then the reader can have that change of heart in their own lives, which is so wonderful to hear as an author that your story can help another person. My most meaningful email that I got once was a woman who was in a shelter and her little boy had been kidnapped. And she said that my first book revolved around, it had a little prayer in it, Jesus, I trust in you. It was counter cross-stitched on a little sampler that was in the heroine's room when she was staying at her elderly aunt's house. And she had held on to that prayer and had gotten her through a difficult situation when her own son had been kidnapped. Mm-hmm. And so this woman had kept that, my book, on her nightstand, the 24 hours that her son had been kidnapped and the police were looking for him. And she said she kept saying that prayer that had been in my book and that had gotten her through. So that, to me, that was a very, very powerful letter that or email that I'd gotten from a reader. And I thought, oh my goodness, you know, when we write our stories, we don't know the impact that they can have and often do have on readers. So I feel very honored to be able to write. It is, it's something I've always wanted to do, and I thank God that I have the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we often discount the power of our books, and not that we need to elevate them to this huge, oh, they're just so powerful, but I think that God can use our words. He can use our situations, and someone who may not pick up a Bible or may not go to church, we hope, you know, at least my hope is that they'll read my book and they'll learn something about God, whether I, you know, have preaching sermons in there or not, but through how the characters react, the characters who know and love God react in a truthful, realistic way can help them somehow in their lives or just to encourage them too.
So true, you know, yes.
So I love that in writing, you know, especially Christian inspirational romantic suspense, that we can add that faith element as well and, you know, hopefully encourage our readers wherever they are. But that's such a powerful, you know, correspondence from that reader, Debbie. That must have given you, like, chills, you know, to receive that.
It was very meaningful to me, and I've never forgotten it, nor will I ever forget it. You know, and I always pray for that woman. And before I start a story, I always ask God, if I can just reach one reader, if there's somebody who can glean something positive from my story. And he always ensures that I know that somebody's gotten something positive out of it, which is so refreshing and helps in those long hours when we're sitting at a computer, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Is this story ever going to come together?
or the flip side is thinking, no one's going to like this story. This is awful.
Right.
This is, how could I write this? Nobody's going to read it, kind of thing. That I think every author, no matter where we are on our publishing journey, I think that we all have those moments where we just think, oh, why did we think we could write? And then, you know, we need to remember stories like you're sharing, readers who have enjoyed our books and maybe even had a more powerful impact, like that woman in the shelter had with one of your books. And remember that, yeah, if it's only an audience of one, you know, that's still an audience. And that's still...
Right. That one person that needs to read the story, hopefully, is who we want to find and touch, certainly.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that is probably another question we had maybe wanted to talk about was one of the most rewarding things about writing romantic suspense. But that sounds pretty rewarding, getting things from your readers. Did you have any, is there anything else that you particularly find rewarding about crafting that romantic suspense story?
Well, I think certainly the reader, and being able to connect with readers, I feel like I have a larger forum, perhaps. I'm active on Facebook, and I love connecting with readers there, getting to know them. Often they'll post prayer requests. I'm able to pray with them. I love that. Love getting to know them, even if it is you know, through the internet. But we do develop a lovely relationship. They'll tell me if they're going in for surgery and ask me to pray for them. Or if certainly during COVID, I put out a daily video, and we had a nice group of prayer warriors. We were praying for our country, for the healthcare workers, for all those who were sick and dying. That was a very special time, and I just started out knowing I needed to do something, and I thought, well, I have this Facebook site. Why don't I just reach out to people? But I wanted to do it more than just text. I wanted to talk to them. And that actually helped me through the COVID time when we were shut down, when it was so dire there at the beginning, because we corresponded, went back and forth with comments and whatnot, and then being able to pray together, you know, this little internet prayer community that was praying really for the whole world and for everything that was happening. So the writing gives me that opportunity to reach out to others on a far larger scale than I, you know, as I said, I was always active in ministry in the church, but you're working within your church or within your small community. But writing allowed me, has allowed me to have a broader audience and then a broader friendship and a broader group of people that I can pray with and for. So that's another aspect of the writing that I love that's even beyond creating the stories. It is something that I never expected. I didn't see that part of it when I first started. I had no idea that it would allow me to interrelate with so many people, and that's been a joy.
Well, that's a wonderful way to end our podcast. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but thank you so much for being on my show today, Debbie.
Sarah, thank you. It's been wonderful, and I'm just sending hugs and love and some prayers to you, to all the people who will be listening to this, and thank you for all you do and for having me today.
You've been listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm Sarah Hammerker, your host. I've been talking with Debbie Giusti. She's a USA Today and Publishers Weekly bestselling author. And stay tuned for an excerpt from her most recent book, Hidden Amish Secrets.
Now an excerpt from Hidden Amish Secrets by Debbie Giusti. Thunder rumbling overhead was as troubling as the guilt that still weighed heavily on Julianne Graber's heart, even after 5 years. Losing her father and brother in one horrific night had been hard to accept. Having it ruled a murder-suicide made their passing even more tragic. The bishop's callous comment about Gott's will had been the final blow. She had vowed never to return to her Amish home. Yet here she was driving back to Mountain Loft, Georgia, on a stormy night that matched her mood. The rain intensified, and wisps of fog impeded visibility. She lowered the headlights on her small Honda, activated the windshield wipers, and checked the GPS on her smartphone. Her estimated time of arrival was close to midnight. She groaned and chastised herself yet again for leaving Dahlonega so late in the day. Her upset increased as she glanced at the notice from the county authorities that was lying on the passenger seat. After reading the letter too many times, she could recite the words by heart. Due to a rise in vagrancy and vandalism, buildings left unoccupied for more than 5 years will be considered abandoned unless efforts are made to either occupy or sell the property. She wouldn't let conniving county bureaucrats lay claim to the farm, two-story house, and outbuildings she had inherited from her father, even if she didn't want to live there herself. Over the last 5 years, she had learned to manage her grief and was better able to handle the memories of the hateful crime that had claimed her father's and brother's lives. Aunt Mary, her father's sister, had been her lifeline back to reality for the first 2 years. Eventually, needing to test her wings like a small bird leaving the nest, Julie had abandoned her Amish faith, moved to a quaint college town in the North Georgia mountains, and worked in a gift shop on the square in Dahlonega for the past 3 years. If not for the letter, she would be in her apartment getting ready for bed instead of navigating the twisting mountain road. A curve appeared ahead. Easing down on the brake pedal, She hugged the shoulder as an approaching delivery truck in the opposite lane swerved around the bend. Frustrated by the aggressive driver, she laid on the horn, hoping to remind the trucker that speeding on the treacherous mountain road was anything but wise. A rock slide had stopped traffic earlier and delayed her for more than 2 hours. She didn't want her arrival to be pushed back even later. Not that anyone expected her. The only welcome would come from an empty farmhouse and a row of graves on the hillside. Her father and brother were buried there, along with her mother, who had died a year earlier. The road wound higher up the mountain and eventually leveled into a plateau. A sign appeared on the left-hand side of the road. Welcome to Mountain Loft, established in 1840 by miners seeking their fortune in the Georgia Gold Rush. She checked her speed and drove through the sleepy town, grateful the stoplights remained green and her progress was unencumbered. In the daytime, she would see the Amish farm community that laid claim to the area west of town. This late at night, the farmers and their families were asleep in their beds, and their homes were bathed in darkness. She passed her once-upon-a-time best friend's house. Rachel Hochstetler had driven Julianne home from the teen gathering at the lake the night her father and brother had died. With the memory of William Lavey's kiss still on her lips, Julie entered her house to find her father lying in a pool of blood. She grimaced at the memory and rubbed her forehead, thinking again of the sharp inhale of breath she had heard behind her, along with her whispered name, before a hard object had slammed against her skull. After awakening hours later, she had stumbled to her feet and glanced at the far side of the room. Her brother Benny sat propped against the wall, legs sprawled out in front of him, mouth open, eyes wide. She could still see the hole in his stomach and the gun clutched in his hand. Tears burned her eyes and blurred her vision. She yanked a tissue from her purse, wiped it across her cheeks, and pulled in a ragged breath as her father's house appeared in the distance. Correction, her house. Grateful that her Honda had made better time than a horse-drawn buggy, she steeled her resolve, turned into the drive, and braked to a stop near the back porch. The rain had eased and the moon hung low in the sky, as it had that night so long ago. The sheriff had determined Benny and her father had argued, and in a fit of anger, her brother had shot Dot and then turned the gun on himself. She still struggled to make sense of something so senseless. Her mouth went dry, and a lump of grief filled her throat, but she was determined to face the past. Pulling in a fortifying breath, she grabbed her flashlight from the console, stepped from the car, and climbed the back steps to the kitchen entrance. Fisting her hand, she hesitated before keying open the door. The house was dark and silent as a tomb. She inhaled the stale air that wafted past her, half expecting the stench of pooled blood to fill her nostrils. For a long, agonizing moment, she stood at the threshold, willing herself to step inside. A shrill, high-pitched scream replayed in her memory. Her scream, when she'd finally regained consciousness and seeing not only her father, but also her brother, dead. Heart pounding from the memory, she slammed the kitchen door and locked it with trembling hands. Morning would be soon enough to deal with the memories.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.